You are listening to a program created at Meridian University. This conversation is a part of Meridian University's virtual summit on transformative learning. Thank you for your interest in this program. For more information about Meridian University's programs, please visit us at meridianuniversity.edu. Thank you. Welcome back, everyone. We are in our third day of Reimagining Learning, a virtual summit on transformative learning. My name is Courtney Lubell, and I'm the Associate Director for the Center for Transformative Learning at Meridian University. We have almost 1,000 participants from around the world participating in this inquiry together, and we really continue to encourage participants to ask their questions and be a part of the conversation. If you're listening in via the telephone, you can press *2, and if you're listening in via the webcast, you can ask questions by entering your question in the submission box in the bottom left-hand corner of your webcast window. We're also in conversation on the summit's Facebook page. We invite you to ask questions and make comments throughout the summit. You can access the summit's Facebook page by clicking on the Facebook icon located on the top left corner of the email you received with today's schedule. If you're listening in via the webcast, you can also access the Facebook page on the webcast access page in the bottom right-hand corner. Right now, we're going into an exciting panel on business and transformative learning. We're going to be in conversation with 5 individuals. David Hodgson will be moderating this panel. David Hodgson weaves together and nurtures ecosystems of people and organizations engaged in creating meaningful and profound change. He is a co-founder of Edge Lab, an agency focused on preparing organizations to meet the challenges of the 21st century, an advisor to Shareable Magazine, and a fellow of the International Futures Forum. And he'll be in conversation today with Sabina Amend, Beatrice Benny, Elizabeth Pierce Dolan, and Louise Hansel. Look forward to the conversation, and over to you, David.
Thank you very much. And welcome everybody who's listening in. First, I'm going to introduce my friends, the panelists, who are a very interesting group of people, I find. First, we have Sabina Amend. She's the founder of Samica, Building Adaptive Minds. She's a multi-skilled consultant, conversation designer, writer, educator, and somatic movement instructor. Culture and Management, Inc., established in 1998, is an intercultural training company, was her first venture. She also serves as MBA faculty at Jones International University. Welcome, Sabina.
Thank you, David.
Then we have Beatrice Benner, PhD. She's the founder of Soma Integral Consulting, a firm dedicated to facilitating the resolution of adaptive challenges by transforming and designing and conscious organizations while focusing on the well-being of social and environmental ecosystems. Her expertise includes adaptive strategy, transformative change, and leadership capacity development. Welcome, Beatrice.
Thank you, David, and hi, everyone.
Then we have Elizabeth Pierce Dolan, is a change agent in overlapping areas of large-scale efforts, people development, and operational excellence. She works with teams who will deliver the work being changed. She fosters team integration and optimization, where all members heard and engaged. Her results achieved through learning. Her organization is a Colorado-based Center Edge LLC. Welcome, Elizabeth.
Thank you so much, David, and hello everyone out there.
And finally, we have Louise Hansel. She is an independent consultant specializing in helping leaders transform their worlds. She creates opportunities for leaders and teams to let go of limiting patterns and break through to the next level of their potential. She provides coaching and experiential-based workshops linking behavior, mindset, performance, and potential. She is affiliated with Mobius Executive Leadership. So welcome, Louise.
Thank you, David. Hi, everybody.
So now we'll move into a few questions we'd talked about yesterday. And first up, we thought it would be good to talk about what it is we mean by transformative learning in business. So, Elizabeth, if you'd like to give us your definitions.
Sure, I'd be glad to do that. At the core of transformative learning theory is the process of perspective transformation, and it has three dimensions. The first, at the inner part of the human being, is psychological and spiritual awareness and understanding. And I think that means the awareness of myself and others, inner self and workings, similar to the ideas that have been brought up forth by Dan Goleman in Emotional Intelligence. Then the second piece that goes from that awareness and understanding is the convictional piece, the choice, the decision. So that moving from that awareness and understanding of the inner workings to making a choice to revise one's belief systems, either about oneself or others. And then that leads to behavioral changes, so that results in changes being made in how one would act. So that's my core definition of what transformative learning is, and it's a very exciting thing to be doing inside of business. I think it's very, very important with all the transitions that are going on in the globe right now, and it seems like every area geographically and also interrelationally and economically. So that's my definition.
Cool. Thank you, Elizabeth.
You're welcome.
So, Beatrice, would you like to give us some reflections?
Sure, I'll be happy to. I'll start with a statement that for me, true authentic learning is always transformative. Otherwise, it is just a simple download of information, or is it rote learning? So transformative learning, really those two words paired together. I think transformative learning is both the process and the capacity. It is the process by which individual groups and organizations challenge the status quo, challenge their deeply held assumptions, their beliefs, their mental models, which are, of course, the way by which we interpret reality. So transformative learning is a process by which we can challenge those assumptions and develop new ones. And as a result, the outcome is to perceive reality with new, fresh eyes, to reframe our thinking, to understand the world and also ourselves in a completely different new ways. You could also consider transformative learning from a developmental and evolutionary perspective. So for me, it is really the spiral of development and change toward increased wisdom and higher level of consciousness. So transformative learning is a process of becoming. And so from that perspective, I think it is a highly creative process, and it is, for me, the process of life. I guess I'll leave it there.
Cool. Thank you very much. Louise.
Great. Okay, so building on what Elizabeth and Beatrice have said, when we talk about transformation, what we're really talking about is shifting root perspectives. Transformation learning in business, it's really about providing the opportunities for leaders and employees to look inside and shift their paradigm, shift these root perspectives. Our root perspectives are really the basic beliefs or views through which we kind of filter and interpret the world and our life. And when we shift these, it's the process of transforming them. We no longer see things the same way, and we're really recreating the internal structure of our consciousness. And this will alter the way that we experience our life and the way we respond to life. So it requires a fundamental shift in the mindset from which we see ourselves, in our organizations, in our lives, in our business, and the various roles we play in the world. So when we transform the way we think, feel, and the way we behave, it will enable us to expand our potential and business potential. So, you know, businesses are realizing that there's a growing need for leaders to overcome the limitations of their current existing ways of thinking. So when we're talking about transformational learning, it's really providing these opportunities and tools to examine these new perspectives and explore, hey, are these ways of looking at things serving us, or are they not serving us? And then we can choose to transform ourselves from our limited perspectives so that we can choose to grow and expand and become more agile and free to respond to the challenges that are there for us. And it's, you know, when we're talking about transformational learning, it's quite different from change, because change, you know, when we're learning things to change things, in that aspect we're talking about just exchanging one thing for another thing. But with transformational learning, we're actually having the opportunity to completely shift, like a metamorphosis. So it's irreversible. We can't go back to seeing things the way we saw them before, and we can continue to expand and grow from there. I think I'll leave it at that.
Cool. And Sabina?
Well, building as well, I'd like to kind of offer a quote that I very much like in the context of transformative learning, and it's a Marcel Proust. The real voyage of discovery consists not in seeking new landscapes, but in having new eyes. And to me, that speaks very much to that deep shift around core perceptions of who one is, how one sees the world, and then as these perceptions change, the shifts in options that become available in terms of one's own actions. It's around those moments when, where there was no insight or no sense of possibility, something completely unheard of, unthought of, unseen of, unimagined shows up, and the life before and after for the leader, for the team, for the organization just isn't the same anymore. And in these instances, people may ask, who were we prior to this shift? And they can't imagine that either anymore. The change is so profound that that prior state now is gone in a certain way as well. So in a way, to me, transformative learning also has a very big piece about letting go of previous versions of the leader, of the individual, or of the group, or of the organization. And I believe in that there's a huge piece in transformative learning that requires really very profound courage in people. And I'll leave it there.
Thank you, Sabine. Well, yeah, that I think that courage piece is actually a good place to transition into the next question, because it entering into a transformational process is a challenging thing, both for individuals and for organizations. So, I mean, there needs to be a driver on the system to encourage that that entry process into transformation. So, I think the next question we had was, why does business need to go through these transformative processes? What are the drivers you've experienced, you see within the system? Actually, Louise, could you speak first to that, please?
So why do businesses choose to go through these transformative process is really there's so much complexity in the world right now. I mean, I think we're all very aware, and I'm sure there's been a lot of discussion around that over the last few days. There's, you know, so much uncertainty, but there's an increasingly flattened and globalized world. And really, you know, our, as Einstein said, our current problems cannot be solved with the same level of thinking that created them. So in the past, you know, we've learned problems have been somewhat technical, and they keep reoccurring. And a lot of successful companies adopted best practices in finance and management, and, you know, they pushed cost reduction and controls and process improvement. And now they're asked to do this and to also capture, you know, all the competitive advantage they can capture through the intangibles, you know, innovation, customer responsiveness, knowledge. So this new paradigm is really requiring us to work smarter and to build and sustain productive working relationships that will allow people to act in despite of all this uncertainty. So leaders in business are saying, okay, I need to solve these current business challenges, and, you know, it requires a different leadership style from me and my organization. And the challenges are more interpersonal rather than just technical. And these interpersonal challenges require a leadership style that is more adaptive. So we're talking about, you know, really this type of leadership requires a new way of thinking that can only be addressed through, you know, changes in people's priorities, their beliefs, their habits. It's really going beyond authoritative expertise and engaging the whole organization. You know, work now is usually around engaging stakeholders, where it involves, you know, shredding these entrenched ways of working to find win-win solutions with them. So this means we really need to create a shift in the way we see things, allowing us to solve these complex problems involving multiple stakeholders in a constantly changing environment, and creating a culture where this human potential can be unlocked. So it requires really changing our mindsets, you know, about what is possible. So how do organizations, businesses create this willingness and this ability for people to look at possibilities that go beyond the limits of their existing paradigms? How do we create this culture where individuals and teams are engaged to continuously stretch themselves and go on what they thought was possible? I mean, people don't always like to step out of their comfort zone. You know, it takes that courage to see possibilities beyond these existing paradigms. That organizations realize, and business is realizing how key that is. So, you know, I just there's this interesting quote that's come to mind about what is possible. There was a runner, Roger Bannister, who was very famous in the 1950s for breaking through the record on the 4-minute mile. And before he did that, everybody said, oh, it's impossible. You know, no one can run that. It's impossible. But he did it. And interestingly enough, in that year, a few more people surpassed it as well. So what was once impossible became possible. And that's this mindset shift that is possible, that organizations and businesses can tap into, which makes the courage, you know, having that courage to go through this process worthwhile.
Cool. Beatrice.
Sure, David. And I really agree with everything that Ruiz says. So I'll try to build on this. And starting with the type of challenges we face. And Ruiz mentioned complexity, uncertainties. I mean, when I look at what institutions and societies face in general, sustainability issues, social challenges, education, healthcare, poverty, and so on and so forth, those are not simple or complicated problems. They are highly complex challenges. And I've actually tried in my own vocabulary to speak to challenges as opposed to maybe technical problems. So these are very, very, very complex situations that have high ambiguity and uncertainties, and they cannot be fixed or solved. Carl Jung used to say the problems of time cannot be solved. They have to be outgrown. For me, for businesses, the challenge is how do we do that? What does that mean to address those very complex situations that are highly politically driven, value driven. So transformative learning is this transformative journey to challenge our current perceptions of what the problems are or the challenges are, and try to remove our blinders. I mean, we all come to the table when you have a multi-stakeholder process with our expert hat. And of course, we see the challenge from our own perspectives. So how can we help each other challenge into each other's perspectives and start going deeper into the dynamic root causes of our challenges, start reframing the challenge. As we do so, we start looking with those new eyes, fresh eyes that we have been speaking to in our definitions. And we are starting to shift our perspectives. And when that shift takes place, that's when new opportunities for the future reside. So it is about reframing in order to sense a new future. What are the new ways of approaching the problems? And I will end by saying that if we are not dealing with technical problems I cannot fix, but instead very highly complex situations that we have to deal with, we cannot expect to be ever done. We will not be done. This is an ongoing process, and we need to develop our capacity for transformative learning so that we can continuously address those challenges and develop innovative ways to do so.
Thank you, Beatrice. Sabina.
Yeah, well, in the work I'm mostly involved with, I guess the courage came a little bit probably through things turning out differently than expected. A lot of my work is focused on internationalization and globalization processes for organizations. So very often, the first steps seemed simple enough. Oh, why don't we export? Why don't we have a subsidiary someplace else? And then really over a few years, usually, the global dynamics for organizations accelerated tremendously. And from, oh, there is another country out there to, ooh, we are dealing with 5, 6, 7, 10, 20 different countries and cultures and locations and mindsets. So one of the things that there as well became pretty visible is tremendous leaps in complexity. All of a sudden, like when people would ask, can you give me 5 do's and don'ts how to not offend Germans? That was kind of the almost technical mindset where things started, which doesn't work with people in general anyway, with the intent to really avoid uncertainty. If I just have a checklist for best practices on how to do this, then I'm safe. And it's really moving towards enabling people to be in a very constructive uncertainty acceptance. Around, for example, if you're dealing with people from 10 different countries around the globe at the same time in one project, you cannot possibly know everything about all the values, patterns, cultures, histories, backgrounds of these different people. You'll be in gray areas. It's really unavoidable. The question is, how do you need to grow? How do you need to develop to be able to be in that uncertainty and to be productive in your communication and your working together anyway? So what I see there is an ever-growing need to actually be able to construct meaning together from very, very different frames of reference. And that is driven by, okay, where's the talent in the world? Where is the sourcing in the world? Where is the client in the world? And by the need to very, very rapidly assemble appropriate constellations of people, resources, responses, market offers, and so on. And this whole process of reconfiguring worldwide in a very quick and agile way is asking a lot of people, including reconfiguring their ideas of how relevant is my nationality, what is a border and what is a boundary, what is identity and belonging. All these are very, very profound questions that get surfaced in these processes and are not easy to answer. That's where I'll leave it.
Thank you, Sabina. And Elizabeth.
Thank you, David. Well, my colleagues have been so thorough and deep and wide with what they've contributed, and I just want to say thank you to all of you. I've really learned a lot listening to you. When I look at the why of transformative learning and the businesses that I've served, I've seen many different reasons, but often there's been a burning crisis or challenges that keep happening again and again without real solution. And those have led to dire consequences to the company brand and to consumer trust, also affecting stock price or the opinion of stock analysts. And many times they would be in a position where they had no idea really how to make those changes work, but they knew they had to. And they would bring in people to help them that were going to do what looked to them like pretty frightening things. But they really didn't have any other choices but to trust the people that they knew to make those kinds of opportunities available to the company. And I had an opportunity to work globally, but with a lot of small groups. And primarily, as my other colleagues have said, it was not really boosting the technology or adding a lot more intellectual property, but it was really about how to make a fundamental change in how the company was operating. They had reached a delta where they couldn't go back. So I was thinking about something that happens in nature, and this is what I watched happen often was that some of you may know this, but when a butterfly goes through its transformation from a caterpillar to its pupa stage before it becomes an actual butterfly in that cocoon, that pupa actually dissolves entirely into a liquid. And then from that liquid, the butterfly is rebuilt. And so much of the kind of work that I think is at the heart of transformative learning and that I was privileged to be able to do inside the companies I worked for actually felt like that to a lot of the people who were at the core of the engagement. It wasn't just that we were changing techniques. It wasn't just that we were changing old rules. It wasn't that we were throwing out that thing in the kitchen door that we didn't even know what it did anymore. It was that we had to open up and become vulnerable and be seen and take new responsibilities and explore places in ourselves that those folks never knew was there because it wasn't asked of them. So what happened was a shift, not so much in techniques, but in how people perceived themselves, held themselves, and then acted, not alone, not in a top-down kind of command and control fashion, but they had to step out and become a leader at the level they were in the company. And what was lovely was that a lot of how this was done was by trust inside the team and people committing to each other to not go into judgment, to allow mistakes, and to really celebrate the uniqueness of each person who was part of that transformative team. And through that trust and support, people became what they never knew they were. And again, I was lucky to be able to observe it. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. wow. So, yeah, that seems like, a good place to bridge into the next section of this, which was actually talking through some of our experiences or knowledge of real kind of case studies of engaging transformation inside organizations. So actually, Louise, would you like to talk about that first, please?
Okay, sure, David. Oh, thank you, Elizabeth, for setting that up so nicely, because I think the way you talked about that was very much what I was a part of, also had the privilege of being a part of in an organization, and it's quite a powerful thing to be a part of, and as you kept using the word privilege, to actually see people be able to unfold and such great things happen from that, it's truly beautiful. And in one particular organization I was in, it was a very technically focused organization. And they had a lot of big performance objectives that that they were not meeting. And it was a crisis situation. And the culture, it was a very, very difficult place to work in. It was a culture of blame. You know, if you ask somebody, you know, what happened, every other department would be blamed. There was a lot of fear. People were scared to take risks, and people were not valued. So, in fact, what was happening is there were a lot of limiting mindsets that were really affecting the value that people put on the role of just working in a team, of the people they worked with, the people they led, continuous improvement. These were things that, you know, weren't seen as valuable based on the mindsets that were there. So the organization realized that this was no longer working and realized that they made the choice to embark on a transformational learning journey. And one of the pieces of this was, you know, working with leadership teams, leaders at all levels of the organization. Every role, there's always a leader. Anyone who has any influence, and you can have influence at any level of the organization. And these small workshops are just opportunities to really give leaders and employees the chance to explore their mindsets and behaviors and become conscious of things that they didn't realize were getting in the way. And it was absolutely amazing to see them realize all that they could be without these limiting mindsets. And amazing results happened. I mean, it was, you know, as Elizabeth so eloquently mentioned about dissolving into, you know, the liquid, and there was disorientation, and there were parts that were painful, and there were parts that were more light. But as we started going through, and the trust started building, and people started realizing what was possible, slowly the culture started to shift, one individual at a time. each thought individuals had, they were more conscious of. The actions they had, the conversations they had started shifting one at a time. And one of the amazing things I also witnessed and was privileged to be a part of was that, and I myself had the realization that it's, you know, always very easy to blame other people. But when we go through a process like this and you start to look at yourself, and individuals realize that they are actually part of the culture and they are contributing themselves to that blame without even knowing it. They're not even conscious of it. And when they realize that, you know, they are part of this culture, it's a huge mindset shift. It's a big realization, because all of a sudden they start to see things in a very different way, and they start to look at their own limited beliefs. And over time, what we saw was, from an organization that had such low engagement scores, it was so low, I mean, it was amazing. It was about 30,000 employees. It climbed more than 15% during that five-year period. And it held its performance during a very deep recession and is now ranked as one of the best places to work, which is quite amazing. And when I go back there every now and then just to see the just to do, you know, some, you know, a little bit of work, it's amazing the conversations that we had when we first started. We couldn't even talk about things like emotion. It just, you know, in their mindset, it wasn't part of work. But now, you know, managers realize that having emotional intelligence is key in a leadership role, and it's, you know, part of the normal conversation. Just little things like that. And just such a privilege to be part of that. It was an organization that had a lot of courage to go on that journey, and amazing things happened. I think I'll leave it at that.
Cool. Thank you for that story. Beatrice, would you care to go, please?
Sure. Thank you, David. As I was listening to you, Louise, and hearing your story, and reflecting on the story I would like to share, I'm starting to see interesting patterns. And I think it is fascinating to me, because the transformative learning process has really definite patterns. So let me go on in my story, and then I'll try to highlight a few of those patterns. The example that I would like to use today is a local example in the Bay Area. So for those of you on the call who live in the Bay Area, you may have heard about it, or you may have even visited the building, because the story is the story of the feasibility study, planning, design, and construction of the Martin Luther King Library in San Jose, which is just south of San Francisco. It was in the mid-90s, I think the project idea emerged in 1996. And this project was quite interesting because it had two client organizations, the City of San Jose and the University of San Jose, which resides in downtown San Jose. Both had the need to extend their library or to build a new library, but they didn't have the resources to do it on their own. And the leadership of those two organizations one day met and said, well, we can't do it alone. How about if we get together and we build one facility, one building, to host our organization? But in order for this to work, the vision will be to have seamless services. And it may sound like, yes, great idea, bringing resources together, one facility, two organizations, but in fact, what they may not have fully realized at the beginning is that what they were actually trying to do was to merge two completely different types of organizations. There was immediate opposition to the project from the university side, the faculty, the students saying, we don't want to mix up with people from the cities. The librarian side saying, it will never work. We have very different ways to operate a library. We have very different skills and capacities. And by the way, there is no precedent of merged library like this in the country. And if it hadn't happened before, that's the reason it cannot work. So the project started with really this this idea of maybe the limiting mindset that Louise was talking about of it will never work. They had a few false starts, which I don't have time here to talk about, but eventually they hired a firm to facilitate the process. And what the basically the consultant started to look at is that there was, in this project, no collaboration. People didn't want to talk to one another, so the two institutions, two organizations, weren't really speaking to one another, and there was no synergy between the two. So they started to design a structured process that facilitated collaboration, sharing of information, that really facilitated the convergence of all the diverse perspectives and point of views. And that also it was a structured process that facilitated unstructured conversation. So there was a lot of freedom in what was happening in the hundreds of meetings that took place over quite a few years to figure out not whether we can do it, but how can we do it. And over, you know, meetings after meetings, again, facilitated, and I would say that the type of facilitation was really important, is modeling behavior, making people accountable for what they are doing and how they behave in meetings. You can imagine that it started with complete lack of trust among the participants. No interest in collaborating because, in fact, people had an interest in killing the projects because they didn't believe it could be successful. And so they had to change this into a culture of, yes, we can do it, and we are here to figure out how we can do it. Changing the behavior from, you know, culture of blame or pointing fingers or fears to new type of behavior saying, how can we work together and collaborate and share our expertise and knowledge and make it work? To developing trust. And trust developed over meetings after meetings. So the culture really started to shift, and the type of conversation that took place during these meetings started to shift. To the point where the leadership of those organizations toward the end of the project said that through this project they were able to create a new project personality. And I think this is an interesting way of expressing what happened in this project, is that in fact, they created shared meaning and a shared identity, which is at the core, really, of transformative learning. Of course, there was very heated conversation. But when those conversations happen within a container that is supportive, this is creating the creative abrasion that is necessary for innovation to take place. The project lasted 7 years. This culture of collaboration and of positive behavior that emerged spanned the entire project throughout the procurement and construction phase. The project was delivered on time, on budget, with no, extremely successful projects as soon as it opened its doors. But it was really shifting the culture. So just to give you an example of what happened during the construction phase, the team made an agreement that when there was a problem on the construction site, instead of starting by writing a letter and trying to resolve the conflict through legal procedures, basically, the participant will pick up the phone, discuss the issues, address the issues, and then record the solution through a letter so that it's all managed properly. But there was this culture of, yes, we're going to pick up the phone and we're going to meet face to face. We have a problem. We are going to figure out collaboratively how to fix it. So highly successful, no single claim for this building. And they successfully were able to operate seamlessly at this building. What's interesting is that it is not emerging. It is really a marriage between two organizations. So you still have two entities operating the buildings, but it is like a marriage in the sense that you have identity and personality for each individual, in that case, each organization, and then you have a joint share identity for the whole system. And I think I'll stop my story here, but I think it was for me it was really interesting to study this project and look at the shift in culture that can take place from a place of can't do to a place of yes, we can do it, and we're working together to do that.
Cool. Thank you, Beatrice. Elizabeth.
Yes, I'm here. One of the transformative learning experiences that I had and had a profound impact on my view of what could happen inside of corporations happened when I worked for 10 years as a consultant to a Fortune 10 company that when I came in, the company had been resting on its business principles from the 1940s. They also had over 500,000 employees around the world and were rapidly losing market share. I came in as a member of a 35-consultant team, and my role was as a change agent focusing on fostering engagement and empowerment in employees at all levels of the company. The project had a secondary goal, which was to improve key processes throughout the company, bringing together diagonal cross-section teams from around the globe to both redesign their processes, but also to have the role of being the implementers when they went back to their own departments. The novelty of this project within the company was having the people who do the work actually look deeply into the root causes of those issues with some help from vendors and professionals, but really they were going to be the deciders to create the needed changes in those processes. This was a very scary proposition for the members of the teams, even for the successful seasoned MBAs. First of all, you can't fix a problem if you can't tell the truth about it. And in this company, there was so much management by fear that no one really wanted to say what was going on. And so working with the executive teams and gaining in a certain sense, a protection for people that no one would be shamed, blamed, fired, or whatever for telling the truth. We were able to get to the real root cause of problems. Also, it challenged their entrenched roles and positions of basically being passive, sitting at the desk, looking busy, and waiting for their bosses to tell them what to do, and then spending lots of time after work documenting deeply what they had done so that they could protect themselves. And here we were asking them to step up, to step out, to speak up, to problem solve in a group, things that, on the whole, very few of them had done. And then to take it further, they were asked to do research and come up with solutions that they'd never done before or even knew how to do. And then finally to go back and to make certain that that plan was implemented in their departmental process. So it wasn't a consultant coming from the outside and telling them what to do. It wasn't somebody above them who may never have done the work they did telling them what to do. It was them that had to step into that position and really exercise parts of them that were fantastic and smart and just waiting there to be pulled upon. At the core of this transformative learning process, each person who was a part of the team was trained to be a facilitative leader. And this was done with the use of videotaping, small group discussion, and one-to-one and group support groups. Also, each member, as part of their participation in the work, was required to report and discuss issues with the company leaders. And this went up to senior vice presidents and all the way to the C team. And in many cases, this is the first time that these members had ever met those people or had an opportunity to speak with them. Some of the projects we did, we had groups from different parts of the process around the world, and it was the first time they'd ever met one another, spoken to each other, or even knew what happened before them or happened after them. And in doing so, the quantifiable outcomes exceeded the leader's beliefs. In every project, at least $1 million was saved. And some, it was in the range of tens of millions annual cycle savings. And that made, you know, of course, those people very happy. But the bigger part was that the individuals now could be leaders at whatever level of the company they were in. And they had the confidence and the practice and had seen that they were given the responsibility to step into making what they thought would work become real. And my favorite moment was sitting at a table next to a woman who was an office manager and had been working for this company for her entire life, and she sat across from the COO and had tears in her eyes and actually said to him, "I can't believe you really cared what I thought and that you believed that I would have something to offer." And the CEO said, "I am so excited that our company is changing in this way." So these individuals shifted their views of themselves. They chose to have new beliefs about their capacity and what they can contribute. And they became respected leaders in the company, regardless of the level at which they served. And again, it was my complete honor and joy to be part of their development. Thank you, David.
Thank you, Alyssa. We'll be heading over to some questions in about 5 minutes. So, Sabine, if not so much time for you, but please go ahead.
So I'll stay with some of the transformations and shifts around, I guess, globalizing organizations. And the themes around how much conversations change over time really, really resonates with me from the previous experiences. So at the beginning of this process of a medium-sized, globally active and privately held company, the conversations we would have about everybody who was not American was always framed as them. And when the question that we raised, we asked, what do you mean by globalization? Usually the answer was, well, blank. And then if you probed a little bit more, really what came through was, make them more like us. And when, as a facilitator, you would then say, so really you mean Americanization, you would get a slightly perplexed look, silence, and then some slightly embarrassed agreement. So it's like, yeah, what else? And seems like we missed a point on a test, but what's the point and what's the test? And over time, it was the quality of the conversations that just changed very profoundly. It wasn't like we have to tell them what to do and they're too stupid to do as they're told, which was where it started. It was more like, wait a minute, maybe there's value in that other perspective. So there was a huge shift in the willingness to listen. There was a shift from our headquarters as an island, which has the only wisdom in the world, to, oh, we are actually part of this globe and this world, and through dialogue, we are really learning and changing each other. And over time, this organization has really developed very, very productive cross-functional and international teams that have a tremendous track record for innovation and market agility and really dealing with some of the very typical dilemma situations that global companies have around, well, how much do we adapt to a particular market? What specific solution are we going to do for whatever China and Ecuador, but what parts of what we do really need to be standardized approaches, processes, structures, and so on. And they've simply developed a tremendous fluidity in navigating those tensions through a culture of dialogue, of listening, and of expecting that someone from that other culture might have something surprisingly useful to say that could just make a difference for everyone. And that is very delightful when that happens, that they actually discovered that sense of fun and play in those interactions and that positive discovery, compared to the beginning where it was just, people were entrenched and held very negative expectations from each other and were deciding to be quite deaf as a consequence. And it's lovely when those ears and eyes open, and the people certainly changed their understanding of what a global organization is, who they are working in it, and what the world is like. I'll leave it there.
Thank you, Sabina. Thank you, everybody. I also have learned a lot from listening to you all. I believe we're passing back over to Courtney for now for some questions.
Thank you, David, and everyone. This has been a very inspiring and interesting panel and very relevant for our times. We do have some questions coming in, and I just want to remind those that are listening in via telephone that you can press *2 if you have a question, and we would take your question live. And if you're listening in via the webcast, as many of you are, you can type your question into the question submission box on the webcast access page, and we will take as many questions as we possibly can in the next 10 or so minutes. So I'll begin, and then whoever on the panel in terms of wants to speak to this can start. And we do have a few, so we'll try to get in as many questions as possible. I have a question from Nausea in London, Ontario. Nausea says, what helps a transformed organization or transformed individuals doing business with others who have been transformed, in worst-case scenario, opposed to shifted perspectives of a transformed organization?
Could you repeat that question?
The question is, what helps a transformed organization or transformed individuals doing business with others who have not been transformed or, in worst-case scenario, opposed to shifted perspectives of a transformed organization? My sense would be just to respond as intuitively as you can to what arises, given there may be some translation in the question itself.
Yeah, I'll just say this is Elizabeth, and I'll just say that kind of when transformed people or transformed organization, and this of course will always happen, has to come into relationship with a company that is not or individuals that are not, it's very challenging. So the first thing is that the transformed person is just acting as a model, an example in the world by the way they behave. So not to shift, as is sometimes easy to do, not to shift from your understandings and your new ways of working, but to continue to hold steady in that and then find ways to meet that person in the areas that you share and build from that shared area of perspective or understanding. So my other colleagues, other ideas or thoughts?
Well, just to add on to what you said, Elizabeth, I think the Gandhi quote is always a very inspiring thing to keep in the back of our minds in those situations, and that is, be the change you want to see. So when you are with people, when an individual is with people who are not sharing, just to keep that in mind, be the change you want to see can give you that resilience and that inspiration to keep going.
This is Sabine. I mean, sometimes there is a little bit of a trap as well for a person or an organization that have experienced change and feel they're now really onto something good, in that there's a bit of a missionary stance, and wrapped into that sometimes is often not so conscious, a judgment of the unchanged ones as less than. So actually finding a place that is internally generous and compassionate and saying, there's space for the changed ones and the as yet to be changed in this world. The world is big enough, can also really take the edge off frustration and tension there.
Great. We have another question coming in from Marcus. And his question is, when the bottom line of business is profit, how do you bring in transformative learning to shift this perspective?
So this is Elizabeth again, and hi, Marcus. I worked in a company that was very bottom line driven, and what happened was they opened the door to some new ways of working, and what they saw was greater savings and also greater profit. And so being able to share those kinds of case studies with people, it's been really counterintuitive in the world for a long time that you can't have one with the, you can't have the two together. You can only have one without the other. And there are numbers of case studies now showing that doing this kind of work actually does positively affect the bottom line. Others of my colleagues, other thoughts?
I would just want to add to what you just said, Ruiz, and saying that maybe the mindset that needs to shift is to see profit as a means to an end and not at the end itself. There is nothing wrong with profit in and of itself, but profits need to be put to the greater good or to achieve whatever the organizational mission is. And I think this is this higher level outcomes that need to be supported. And transformative learning can help that and achieve profit.
So this is David, obviously enough. And when I did my MBA, we spent a lot of time talking about the triple bottom line and helping expand the consciousness of organizations to move beyond just the financial elements, but to also see social impacts and ecological impacts, and that historically businesses have just optimized for the financial reward. But now the part of this kind of transformed perspective is looking at optimizing in for more than one dimension simultaneously. But that it is interesting to see that many companies that are starting to do this are actually finding that their profitability and their stock price and the like are actually positively impacted.
Great. I think we have time just for one more question. And the question is from Matt in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And Matt asks, how can we bring more imagination and collaboration to business, both for individuals as well as the vision of the business itself?
This is such a great question. Because if you recall what I mentioned in the introductions of what is transformative learning, from my perspective, transformative learning is a creative process, and all creative processes require imaginations, and it also requires collaborations because and there is a lot of research right now being done on creativity and what sparks the great ideas and the capacity to do associations and to collaborate or to talk to people who have very, very different perspectives so that you can get those fresh insights and ideas are really important. So, in fact, it's a little bit like a feedback loop in the sense that if you embark in a transformative journey, you are going to develop your creative capacity. That will be one of the outcomes at the individual level and at the group level. And as you deepen and develop your creative capacity, your capacity for imagination and collaboration and insight, you are able to go through deeper and deeper transformative learning. So I think it's really, for me, the challenge is to develop those core capacity. What can help us go through those transformative learning experiences? And of course, it's collaborations, is being able to deal or stand still in complexity and ambiguity, embrace complexity, accept not knowing, be able to have those productive conversations, which may be very heated conversation. That doesn't mean that there isn't any tension. Actually, creativity happens in tension, but it has to be supported through a collaborative environment, through an environment of trust, and most importantly, empathy. And there are probably many other skills, just mentioning a few here. So it is really critical we start developing those skills in order to develop our creativity and imaginative capacity.
This is Elizabeth, and I'd like to just add one thing to that around collaboration, that we can bring collaboration into the most mundane of activities and workspaces. So some things that I've done and participated in that have been very successful is that meetings, you know, regular meetings that a department or a group of people who are working together have on a weekly basis or, you know, bi-monthly or whatever it might be, is that there are ground rules that everybody's opinions are respected, that everyone's mind is valuable to solving problems and to creating new solutions, and so everyone is heard from. And also that work teams change, that, you know, that there's a department and different projects, the work teams are in constant motion so that people have opportunities to collaborate with everyone.
Yeah, and there's also a lot of interesting considerations around what in an organization is considered efficiency and what is considered working hard. And that's an area where a lot of organizations have a chance to really look at that again and start reframing in terms of, wait a minute, the efficiency of creativity is a different set of habits and practices than the efficiency of optimizing and sometimes an operational process. The efficiency of innovation of people is something very different than the efficiency of a machine. So there is conversations to be had and different frames to be developed that can really support the different practices, which, depending on your organization, may not look like work. That's one of the reasons why I advocate very much to bring a lot more, for example, play and play methodologies into organizations to soften frames of thinking, to open doors into collaboration and experimentation, because it's a practice and one gets better at it with doing it more.
I'll just piggyback one thing more on what Sabina said, is that a tolerance for chaos and also for feelings. It's hard to be creative without feelings. It's hard to collaborate without feelings. So feelings in, and also that to change anything or to create anything, there has to be periods of chaos, and that's really wonderful and great and needs to be supported.
Absolutely wonderful responses from the panel. We will need to move to closing remarks, and I'll hand it back over to you, David.
Thank you very much, Courtney. I'm kind of almost sorry that this is over now, or about to be over. It's been such a rich and wonderful conversation. So let's start closing remarks, perhaps with Sabine, actually.
Well, then I'll close with a little quote which my playful self and my little trickster likes a lot. This is one by Martin Buber, and it is, "All journeys have secret destinations of which the traveler is unaware." So it's an invitation to journey, even if often things might not be all that clear. It'll be all right in the end.
Thank you. Let's go for Elizabeth next.
Well, I would like to send out warm thank yous to all of you out there in the world who have participated in this today and that came here to listen to us. And thank you so much for listening and hearing. And I just wish you all very well in everything that you're doing.
Thank you. And Beatrice.
Thank you, David. Well, I really greatly enjoyed this conversation. I will end by mentioning something that we did not address at all, and transformation and change always seems extremely scary because there is always a loss and there is always chaos, as Elizabeth just mentioned before. And nobody really likes to go through this loss and chaos or chaotic phases. But we have to understand that in the transformative process, there is also a lot of observation that remains. We are not transforming everything all at once. So we often talked about transformation are those really deep experiences, and they are. But at the same time, they take time, and they are also incremental in the sense that this is an ongoing process like a spiral of development. And through each one of the loops, there is a lot of observation. So I don't want anyone to feel too scared of embarking on those journeys. And we are always supportive. So, thank you.
Thank you. And Louise.
Okay, well, I want to thank you, David, and thank all my panel colleagues. It was a very rich discussion. And thank you to all the listeners and to Meridian for hosting. It's such a rich topic. And I just want to highlight that we all have this ability to transform. It's within all of us. It's in our DNA. It's in our human impulses to grow. We have so much potential that we don't even realize in ourselves, in businesses and organizations in the world we haven't even tapped into, and we all can. So I just wish you all the very best in your journey. Thank you.
Thank you. Wow. Thank you. Thank you all. And yeah, my thanks to the listeners too. So Courtney.
Thank you, David, Sabina, Beatrice, Elizabeth, and Luis. This has been a definite highlight for me in terms of the work that each of you are doing at the edge of business and transformative learning and the courage it takes to bring in transformative learning as a real and deep engagement with business itself. So I just feel that the five of you are doing profound work and really appreciate your contribution.
Thank you, Courtney. That's very nice.
Thank you.
And I want to thank all of the individuals participating and your contribution to the conversation by the questions that you're asking. Please continue to ask your questions. Even if we can't get to everyone's question, your questions are still being a part of what is unfolding in the conversation on Reimagining Learning, a virtual summit on transformative learning, We will next again be in conversation at 1:30 Pacific Daylight Time with Anthony Hodson on transformative resilience and human systems at 1:30. So I look forward to seeing you all there and look forward to engaging the inquiry on our third day. Thank you, everyone, and goodbye. Bye.